Well, you've been looking today at what's been unfolding corporate-wise, and QBE really is the big story of the day.
It is a big story. It's the first major opportunistic takeover bid in light of the global credit crisis. IAG, the old NRMA Insurance, is a little bit battered and bruised. They've been hit by storms, and the UK business is not going so well, and their share price had halved over 12 months. And bang, QBE lobs a $7.5 billion hostile takeover bid on the table. And
do you have any declare here, by the way, before we go any further?
Well, actually, I do. I can't say too much because my wife's on the board of the RACV, which has a very large joint venture with IAG. IAG owns 70% of the joint venture, and the RACV owns 30%, and that basically is the RACV NRMA business nationwide.
Have you discussed this topic with her prior to coming on air?
Yeah, she's given me a few lines to push out there. Right? No, she hasn't. She said, don't say anything, and I said, I have to disclose, and I have to talk about the story of the day. Yep. Sorry.
Yes.
So we had a bit of a tiff about it, actually.
But now we know where you stand.
Yeah, so it's a
tiff, really.
Oh, well, you know, a light one. But it's an exciting story. I mean, QBE, I love the story of QBE. Their chairman is a guy called John Cloney. He was the CEO in 1981. He ran the company for 8 years. He's been chairman ever since. So he's been either chief executive or chairman for the last 17 years. And the current chief executive, Frank O'Halloran, was finance director from 1978 until 1989. So this dynamic duo, Cloney and O'Halloran, have been working together at the top two positions at QBE since 1981, and it is one of the five genuine international Australian success stories, along with BHP, Macquarie Bank, Westfield and Rupert and News Corp.
Do you know how I first found about them? It was that
Sydney
they were
Swans.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that was, I'm sure that's the same thing for everyone.
Yeah, because they're not so visible here because they're big in the more commercial insurance, so insuring buildings and giving indemnities for directors who stuff up and get sued, that sort of stuff, whereas NRMA/IAG is more in the personal line space of your house and car, like the RACV. So one level, it's a bit scary because we've got so many oligopolies and duopolies in Australia, such a concentrated corporate sector, and insurance is sort of getting a bit that way. Mm-hmm. You know, Suncorp took over Promina last year.
You're sort of wondering about competition then and about the sort of service that you're going to get to various customers because
of
that.
Yeah, well, basically, we used to have really, really rigorous competition. In fact, HIH was so crazily uncommercial. We had fantastic competition where everyone was losing money when HIH was around because they didn't charge enough for their products. And then they fell over. And basically, since then, the insurance industry has been in the perfect storm of wonderful investment markets, booming markets, pricing power, less competitors, put the prices up. So they've been making heaps of money, although in the last year, IAG have been buffeted somewhat. I mean, QBE, when those planes hit the towers on September 11, I actually reckon QBE was technically insolvent that night, because they suffered massive liabilities. But they managed it brilliantly. They held their nerve. They raised about $1 billion of capital. Their share price plunged to as low as $3 in the turmoil that followed. And then they got to a high of 35, and their market cap hit $30 billion. It's come off a bit now. It's back today. It was up down 30 cents to $22.90.
Well, they're not alone in that, though, are they?
No, but it'll be a big takeover battle to watch in the coming weeks, and we'll see how it plays out.
The Lotus. Try that again. What time is it? I haven't had a drink at all. The latest on Opus Prime. Try and say that quickly. Latest on Opus Prime.
Opus Prime is, well, I guess you can probably call it the Opus 4 now. There are four businesses out there that have the Opus model. There was Tricom Securities, which is had borrowed at the peak $2.5 billion, and they're sort of staggering along with the support of ANZ. There's Opus Prime, which has gone broke, obviously, with debts of $1.2 billion. There's Lift Capital, which went into administration last week, which has debts of about $650 million. And there's another mob in Collins Street at 349 Collins Street called Chimera, which has exactly the same business model, is refusing to comment, and is basically in the middle of a run at the moment where everyone's trying to get their money out. Mm. And I guess my assessment of that would be they will just run down to nothing because no one anymore will ever pledge their shares and not own them. Mm. So if you had that business model, everyone is just saying, I'm out. So they won't go broke as long as they haven't got any bad clients that have blown up. So in the case of Opus Prime, we had Chris Murphy, who lost $100 million. So the whole thing went broke. In the case of Lift Capital, they had big exposures to MFS and Orco, so they've gone into administration. So yeah. Shamira will basically run down to nothing, or if they've got some bad clients, they'll go to zero. But the interesting story here is that ANZ and Merrill Lynch together are the common banker to all four.
Oh.
And they lent at the peak of it, they lent $5 billion, more than $5 billion to those four companies, supporting at the peak probably $7 or $8 billion of stock. And that whole situation has been unwound. So there's been one big, massive, large margin call fire sale of all those shares, which has caused havoc, absolute havoc in the small cap space of the stock market. And ANZ Bank's now having an inquiry, and they said that they're getting out of securities lending totally. They're not going to do it anymore. So it's real.
Change the face.
Blood on the streets out there.
Yes. So you haven't mentioned haircuts, but you've mentioned blood on the streets, and there was some other thing.
Well, I think ANZ will take a haircut.
Right, God.
And it's very amusing. They've called in David Crawford to do a review of their sort of dodgy practices, because they've put four guys on gardening leave because they were clients of Opus Prime. So they're lending them hundreds of millions at the same time as having their own margin calls and trying to get the stock out. So really dodgy stuff. So they've called in David Crawford, who only resigned as a Westpac director a few months ago. So to call in a rival bank director is pretty embarrassing. But I actually reckon he's got a bit of a conflict, David Crawford, because he's the chairman of Lendlease. And Lendlease is building ANZ's new $379 million headquarters at Docklands, the biggest purpose-built headquarter deal in Australian history. So, interesting one that they've picked a big commercial associate.
It's a small world, isn't it? That was just an accident, too, that they've done that, I'm sure.
Well, it's a small town, Melbourne. Everyone knows everyone. David Crawford.
Fuel Watch is coming.
Yeah, and it's been in Western Australia, I think.
What do you reckon, Stephen? I reckon it's not such a bad idea. I mean, maybe it's sort of a bit of...
You have to put how much you're going to charge, I think, the next day.
They're going to publish where you can buy cheap petrol, basically.
Yeah, well, he's claimed he's cut prices by 2 to 5% in WA. And the fact that the federal government's appointed him as the federal petrol commissioner suggests they believe it. But I noticed Terry McCrann ripping into it the whole thing today, saying that we won't get the discounts now because the whole pricing structure will flatten out.
Right, so yeah, they'll have to give 24 hours notice, apparently. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah. So there's that.
Yep.
I'm not going to talk about what the Reserve Bank Governor said today because he's probably already spoken
about
that.
No, he didn't. We don't talk about the Reserve Bank Governor. No.
Yeah, well, anyway, he's basically saying, almost saying, sorry, I know it's hurting you out there, but we reckon we're winning against inflation, and analysts are reading that as saying, well, the next movement in rates is down. What do you reckon?
I think that's right, and I think Reserve Bank Governor's been verbaled in a major way by a number of newspapers and media, and I think he's chastened.
Yeah.
And there was a very interesting story that Wayne Swan had dinner with the journalist Glenn Milne on the Saturday night.
Your best friend.
My best friend. On the Saturday night before Glenn Milne did a column pointing out he was a tight-fisted Protestant banker who didn't feel sympathy, and so there was a big feeling going around that whether Swan was encouraging this attack on the Reserve Bank for being too mean.
Mm. Well, he certainly came out saying today, look, I know you're hurting.
Stephen, what do Barry Hall, Jody Rich and Graham Richardson have in common?
I think they've all been given one chance too many.
Why is that? Like, we've just forgiven them and they've come back to...
Well, I'm starting to think that it's an unfortunate character trait for the nation, is that as a nation we tend to be too forgiving of people who have sinned or done something wrong, and the old stitch in time phrase would apply quite effectively, and that's where Jody Rich is an example, the OneTel founder. He went broke with Imagineering after the 1987 stock market crash.
Yes.
If the Packers and the Murdochs and everyone else hadn't forgiven him for that, OneTel wouldn't have been a disaster. John Howard's insurance regulators told him back in the late 1970s to deregister FAI Insurance. He had lunch with Rodney Adler's dad, Larry. They did some deal. He gave him another chance. And FAI was a major factor in the HIH catastrophe of 2001. So I just think even Opus Prime, ANZ sacked Laurie Emeny in 1987, they retrenched him. Then they lent him $650 million and he's caused the greatest fiasco in financial markets since HIH collapsed. If we hadn't given him another chance, like with Larry Adler, like with Jody Rich, like with Barry Hall, then we wouldn't have had people getting knocked out, people getting burnt, HIH collapsing, OneTel falling over, and even in the political space, you know, Graham Richardson, there he was again on Four Corners, still out there advising property developers, making millions, doing questionable deals when somehow the system didn't knock him out of the game. And same with Brian Burke, went to jail 20 years later. It takes a massive...
Some people do learn from their mistakes, though.
Well, I agree that, you know, as a society, we should, you know, believe in rehabilitation and forgiveness. But I just think that when, you know, you do a major sin, you know, you send a major public company broke, or, you know, you've got the worst record for violence in the AFL, things like that. You know, when you've really established your credentials for starting
Not just a one-off.
Yeah, that's right. Then you should punish them. And I think we've learned the lesson in a number of those examples.
Well, it's not just the punishing, but it's, in fact, actively encouraging them to come back and get involved in the same field again. That's the thing that I find intriguing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks, Lindy.
See you soon. Derek, after 7 o'clock. Yeah.